today. I am here to give you the assurance that I have not forgotten you.
If we want to see the new evangelization become more than just jargon, if we want to see it grow legs and gain traction and change the world, we have got to take seriously our responsibilities as husbands and fathers, and especially as sons of God.
I want to propose to you then that something that our world is desperately in need of in the midst of this crisis is Catholic Christian masculinity.
If you want to be a good father, then bring your children to confession with you.
I can't get there unless I become a man of ascesis, a man of asceticism, a man of training.
A man not doing penance, a man not disciplined, is not a man.
You guys have upped your game.
You know what, guys, I gotta say, I love this, the concept of Man Show.
Warning. The Catholic Man Show is about to begin.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. Adam Minahan here, sitting with David Niles. We don't have Juan here or Jim. Juan is our producer and best friend, and Jim is our bodyguard logistics manager and also one of our best friends.
Speaking of Juan, ¿dónde los paper towel?
He used them all. That's what you were looking for? I was wondering what you were looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he used them all last time he spilled a beer. But
did,
we have
wait,
a,
did he really?
Yeah, yeah. But we have a special guest with us today, Father Ephraim, Dominican priest of God from the St. Joseph's Eastern Province of the Dominican House of Studies. Is that close?
Well, actually, I live at St. Dominic's Priory. It's the other Dominican place in D.C.
Okay. I mean, I wish.
First, the oldest in D.C. Senior.
I wish I lived in a place that had two Dominican places.
That would be awesome.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
But not D.C. I like Tulsa.
I actually don't want to live in D.C.
Yeah.
And I wish I lived in Tulsa.
There, yeah. You guys should all just come here. That would be better. That'd be really cool.
You could like, I don't know, do you guys have like family, like a weekly family meeting? You could propose it.
Monthly?
Like a chapter? Like a chapter meeting?
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like a chapter meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got next time, Father Ephraim, you should be like, I have a proposal.
The cool thing is I'm actually the chapter secretary.
So
the minutes reflect whatever I put in them.
Yeah, it actually doesn't matter what they're all saying. Yeah.
A resolution was reached, unanimous vote.
To sell the property.
Tulsa.
And move to Tulsa.
So Father, Dave has five children. I have five children. Everywhere we go, pretty much, we get a lot of, like, if we go together, like, all of our families together, we get a lot of looks, right? There's a lot of, like...
I don't know if you noticed today, walking out of the restaurant.
That's what we're going to bring up.
Okay.
So the hilarious thing is, like, so we all have dinner, or lunch, I'm sorry, right after Holy
this
Mass.
This is today, yeah.
Today. And we're all walking out of this restaurant.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of what appears to be seasoned Protestant people sitting in the chair, you know, in the booth.
Other regular people.
And as we're all walking out, you know, lined out, like there's 10 children, four adults, and then a Dominican priest. And so like, it was hilarious because like you saw all like the eyes getting bigger and bigger with all the kids continually going. And then there's like some guy in a white robe at the back. And so like, I saw this old lady, she was like, her eyes just kept getting bigger and bigger. And then like, she saw you. And she like looked over at her husband like this, like, I have no idea what I just saw.
I think that guy's a magician.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Wizard party.
Yeah.
Right,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a long, it was a long walk. It took a little while. Yeah. That wasn't my fault. That was you guys.
Was that a parade?
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. A procession.
Yeah.
But no, it's great to have you on. It's great to have you here in Tulsa. You were part of the Thomistic conference that was held by Dr. Jennifer Frey in the TU, Tulsa University.
Honors
College. Honors College. Yes, yeah. Thank you. Yes. And
that's the thing, like, that's what we do in Tulsa. We have, you
we
know,
just
like,
do cool things. That's, you know, what we try to do.
Tomistic conferences and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. There's apparently like an Irish conference going on somewhere too.
You know what? Yes. Our daughters are dancing. Irish dancing.
They performed in it yesterday.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
How
cool.
Awesome is that?
Mm-hmm.
Super
so,
cool.
Yeah. So that's where you guys were yesterday.
No.
Actually, no. We were at a men's conference in Oklahoma City, but.
Okay. So.
Another really cool thing.
We all missed the Irish.
We did.
We like, did.
We were negligent fathers missing, not there when our daughters were performing.
Yeah. No,
on
that's
the biggest
fine.
On the biggest stage of their life.
Yeah.
They won't remember it forever.
I'm sure not. I really am. You know what? Counting. I'm hoping on that.
Yeah.
Banking on it.
But also we were at the Oklahoma Catholic Men's Conference. Over 1,000 guys gathered together. We had Chris Stefanik, Jeff Cavins, a bunch of like top-notch speakers. We had, I think the count was 750 confessions heard. Out of like 1,000? That's batting good odds.
That's good. Yeah, that's a high.
Yeah.
High batting average. Congratulations. Thank you.
That's
your service to confession.
Yeah.
I didn't do any of it. Like some guy actually did try to come up to me and confess. I was like, "Listen, I can't give you absolution." I mean, you can keep going.
I mean, finish what you're saying cuz I'm actually really interested in it, but
yeah, send them to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like hearing confessions, which I don't know if I shouldn't say that. Does that seem weird?
No.
No.
Yeah.
No, I think priests say that a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, well, very holy priests actually say that a lot.
I was actually going to ask you, what, like, how much opportunity do you have to hear confession?
More opportunity than I take advantage of. But yeah, I mean, we, you know, I'm in my assignment is an academic one. So it's sort of like as much as I sign up for is what I do.
Like, it just parishes in the, like, in the area. Is
like
that what
a
it
sub,
is?
You like kind of sub in?
Right. They're subbing in parishes. The Dominican House of Studies is not a parish in D.C., but then St. Dominic's is. So we have a parish church with daily confessions.
Like on the campus?
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That has parochial priests? Wait.
Yeah,
no,
two...
I mean, no, I didn't mean parochial. I meant secular priests?
Nope. No, we are the pastor who's one of the friars in our community, and then the rest of us living there. There's like 25 friars there altogether.
Mm-hmm.
Only a couple of them are assigned to full-time to administration for the parish. But the rest of us sort of fill in, say mass, hear confessions, do other things.
Nice.
We had a big, Father Gregory Pine preached for an event there the other day it was the vigil of the day of St. Thomas's death, March 7th. Yes. So, which is the same occasion for this conference that I'm here for.
Uh-huh.
What was the highlight of the conference for you, other than your talk?
Well,
did you like the qualification?
Yeah. No, I mean, Dr. Don Prudlow, who's a historian at TU and studied at the University of Virginia under a Dominican friar named Father Augustine Thompson. So he was there too. But Don Prudlow gave the opening sort of evening reflection on the life of St. Thomas. And it was extremely beautiful. And it was one of the greatest things I've ever heard about St. Thomas. And
for a Dominican, that is high praise.
I know. It was sort of like embarrassing. I was like, what? I mean, well, he's able to show his zeal in a kind of, you know, disinterested way, I guess.
Okay.
And you could see that he really took St. Thomas as a hero and a brother and saw many things through the light that St. Thomas kind of casts in history, but also in the present. So it was just really moving. That was the highlight. It was all downhill from there.
Well, he has a book on St. Thomas Aquinas,
yeah.
Like basically a kind of a biography of St. Thomas Aquinas. So if you want to look that up, it's, I think the title is Thomas Aquinas. But if you just Google Thomas Aquinas Prudlow, you'll be able to get that book.
Yeah,
it's really good. I'm almost done with it. So
excellent.
Excellent. So
can I just give an update on the pigs? I know.
Oh yes, everybody
Ephraim's here, but I just.
Yes.
We saw, like, last
people
week.
There's like four people that, like, are very interested in this.
Yeah, they're
But
asking.
I don't want to let them down.
Right. Yeah, I understand.
So, we had some setbacks this week.
I feel like he says this every week.
Yeah. These were a little...
coming.
Yeah,
it was a sad, tough week. I had some sick pigs. I was doing everything I could to save piglets. You know, they're like babies, right?
Piglets,
yeah,
yes.
Piglets.
Yeah, that's...
And they were just like lethargic. So we lost three this week. It was a tough week. The first one it was like really hard for the kids because, you know, death is always hard. But these piglets, they've been like holding since they were born and like, oh, just like loving on them, right? It's not like when a chicken dies. Like,
who cares?
Yeah, it's like,
I was hungry
like,
anyway.
When a chicken dies, it's like, dang it, like, I'm gonna have to go get another chicken now, you know, like it's just a chore.
It's kind of like a bug.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so like we lost three. I think at this point I have a handle on, I think it was a bacterial infection. I don't know what exactly it is, but it's better now. I think all the piglets have died that are gonna die.
They're all dying. They will all die.
You're right.
The end of these pigs is death.
Is death, yeah. Right. Hopefully a healthy one.
Right.
Not like a
sickly one.
Yeah, exactly. Not a disease-infested one. But I did have to have more than one. When they died, I would have a very private flinging them into the neighbor's trees ceremony. And
the neighbors know.
Yes.
So
the neighbors have
that private.
Yeah.
There's a bobcat that lives in the neighbor's trees, and so look,
it works out.
Circle of life.
Yeah, it is. So anyway,
dude, I didn't.
That's where
this.
We are. Just tough lessons on the farm. Honestly, it was a little bit interesting because I don't often feel like a failure, but I was having to confront emotions and feelings of failure this last week. Which was a little bit of a challenge.
We should talk a lot more then.
Yeah. Well, typically I'm just awesome, okay?
All right, so we're here with Father Ephraim. We are going to be talking a little bit about fatherhood, maybe a little bit. We'll see where the conversation
goes.
We're
just going to find out.
Yeah, we'll be right back.
Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So, for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. Here with Adam Minahan, we have our special guest, Father Ephraim. Thanks for being here, Father.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me.
Man,
we'll see. I don't know. Maybe he doesn't. He's like, I don't know. This is maybe a huge...
You're welcome.
Yeah, I regret this.
I'll reserve judgment till the end. Yeah,
I will leave.
Yeah. So, Father, you were telling us that you became Catholic in 2010.
Correct? In a certain sense.
Yeah, so you said like you found out you were actually baptized Catholic.
Right.
At a young age.
Yeah, both a convert and a cradle Catholic.
How interesting.
Yeah.
So you were baptized Catholic, but you didn't know. Okay.
Yeah, so.
How did that happen?
My mom had, my sister baptized Catholic. She had been, you know, raised Catholic, uh-huh. and but there was no, we didn't really go to church after that. And then later on.
Okay.
In life, my dad and my stepmom started going to a Methodist church. So that was my first conscious, you know, Christian life.
Okay.
So what drew you to Catholicism?
It was largely, in the first place, it was this young couple. They were my camp counselors at Methodist church camp.
And, okay.
They were... I mean,
they sound like really good Methodists.
They were, yeah. I mean, they were doing it all right. Telling me about John Wesley. You know about the Wesleys?
Yeah.
My great grandfather, Dr. Stanley Niles, was president of Iowa Wesleyan University.
Really,
mm-hmm.
Niles.
Welsh. Yeah.
You're Welsh too?
I believe so.
I'm a Reese. That's one of those. There's not that many Welsh names.
Mm-hmm.
Jones.
I'm actually unsure if Niles is Irish or Welsh, but it could be Welsh.
It could.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it was a big thing in Wales too.
Like my dad, like on my dad's side, they have always said it's a Welsh name.
Mm-hmm.
Even though
that's fair.
When you look it up, it seems like it's more of an Irish, like Niall.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway,
yeah.
So these two, this couple of Methodists, how did they bring you to the Catholic faith?
They told me that the Catholics were basically right about everything. It was just sort of like okay. The guy, yeah, the guy, Chris Klopp, he was a seminarian at Duke Divinity School, where there was something at the time, almost like the kind of the Oxford movement, John Henry Newman. Uh-huh. It was like this very, you know, they were in favor of reading the church fathers and sacraments and intercession of the saints and a doctrine of, yeah, various Catholic sounding doctrines. So I was getting sort of Catholic pilled as a Methodist teenager. And there was a theologian there at the time named Stanley Hauerwas who said lots of like funny and cool things that made you think that the Catholics were an awesome kind of Christian. So I went along with that for
how interesting.
Several years. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it happens.
Okay.
I don't know. Because it is
you
true.
Don't often hear those stories. Mm-hmm. You hear the ones that are the opposite of that.
They're
sometimes.
Pulling people away from the church.
Right, you know,
yeah.
But
yeah. Yeah, it was thank God for crypto Catholic. I mean, I find that it seems like a lot of Protestant seminarians, you know, learn things about the church that you know, dispose them towards a greater understanding of the Catholic tradition, but then sometimes okay. are, you know, hampered by various difficulties mm-hmm. and responsibilities. And so, but I was free to become Catholic. So eventually I did.
Fascinating. Yeah. So how soon after you converted, did you discern the priesthood? Or did you discern priesthood first? Was it celibacy you discerned first? What was that like?
It was a strange sense of God demanding that I look into priesthood, and I didn't want to. Hmm. And I thought, well, if I have to do this, I always liked the, and to me, one of the big marks of the truth of the Catholic Church was like religious orders, monks, mm-hmm. and then St. Francis of Assisi. I mean, just someone who wanted to take the gospel as a rule of life, as he, you know, that the rule of St. Francis was like largely just quotations from the gospels. What if you were to do all the crazy things that Jesus actually says?
To do, yeah.
So that was always in my mind as like, this obviously needs to be part of, not only part of the Christian church, but like it should be a part that's treasured and that gives direction to the whole thing. So I was like, oh, well, I think God's calling me to be a priest, which doesn't sound like I don't want to do that at all. So I thought I'll check out some of these sort of monk priests that, yeah, I had to kind of dig into what, you know, what those were. And Thomas Aquinas was one that I knew was on that map, that he was some sort of monk type guy. So I found the Dominicans and I was like, this is it. This is like church camp and college and a life of preaching the gospel. And then eventually
college.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a beautiful life, that I was immediately attracted to. You know, they make you wait a while mm-hmm. after you convert. So
sure. Yeah. Which is prudent.
It's like, you know, you're kind of in a purgatory.
Yeah.
A limbo.
Cool your jets.
Yeah.
Right.
So what was your prayer, if you don't mind me asking, what was your prayer life like at that time? Like, because obviously to be able to hear a vocation called from God,
especially like, the way you put it, like, yeah, he was commanding
like,
you.
It's mm-hmm. like, so obviously you had a prayer life. Like, what mm-hmm. was, what did that look like?
Yeah. I've always had, I have a hard time sort of describing or even talking about prayer in a way. Because yeah, it's like, I've always done it. I've always sort of felt like when I first started to sort of hear about God, it immediately made sense to me. And then the scriptures as a way of, sort of speaking with him and hearing his voice. And I don't know, it was very natural. So it just seemed like that he was in my mind, he was in the world around me, and he was in people that sort of intervened and you know, either helpers or enemies. So it's hard to describe prayer in any specific way, but it was like, yeah, I remember there was a specific night I was in the Catholic worker house in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and had watched a movie about a priest, which was like, it was about Oscar Romero, and he was a different kind of priest than I had sort of seen yet. And I was like, what's this? Is this something that God is calling me to?
Is that the one where he gets killed in the end?
Yeah, he gets killed in the end. And I was like, this is still happening? I was reading about these guys, you know, in church history, but apparently it's still going on in the 80s. So then there was this sort of weight, you know, God is heavy. Mm-hmm. And I sort of, in a certain sense, it was an experience of being, weighed down by him, the sort of dark cloud, or a wrestling or something like that. And then, you know, eventually I sort of gave up.
And you surrendered.
That's a good choice.
Yeah, yeah. That if there is an army coming against you with 10,000 men, you know, count up your troops.
Right, exactly. Because you don't have enough. I'll just tell you.
Unless you're Don Juan of Austria.
Well, not to go against God's army.
Right.
Yeah. Nobody can do that.
No, right.
Let me ask you a sidebar question.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize we were on a bar yet.
I have
a trial.
I have these. Who do Dominicans talk about more? St. Thomas Aquinas or St. Dominic?
What providence?
I don't know.
Because that matters.
Oh, does it?
Mm. At least
divine providence?
Yeah.
Which providence?
Which one?
Providence College?
No, like East, West, South.
Oh, Providence.
I said Providence. Yes, yeah, Providence. Yeah. Yes.
Well, actually.
God, Adam.
I don't know. I mean.
So it's definitely, the answer is not definitely Thomas Aquinas.
We've been like, there's been a lot of like St. Dominic juice being pumped into the Dominican machine in the past 50 years.
All right.
And
I'd like some of that. Yeah, that sounds like good stuff.
Yeah. It's cool. It's like you don't necessarily know about him when you approach the Dominicans for the first time, but then immediately it's like, oh, of course. Yeah. Well, of course I want to know about St. Dominic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's mysterious. You know, like Jesus, he didn't write much down. Mm-hmm. He wrote down a little bit more than Jesus did. Mysteriously, you know, he founded the Order of Preachers, but do we have any of his sermons? No. Hmm. So there's something, you know, something cool about the fact that that the record is sort of rumors, you know, history of his presence. Like my favorite church council is the Fourth Lateran Council, 1215, and it's like St. Dominic was there.
Hmm.
And there was a lot about preaching and like missions. So I just love thinking about him
being
at a church council and just like thinking about stuff.
Like it's in the record, like, oh, and St. Dominic was here. Like,
he's probably not even listed. It's just like, you know, he was there as the assistant to like a bishop.
Okay. All right.
Some young Spanish priest.
So he didn't have a reputation at the time.
Right. He was sort of about to found the Dominicans.
Gotcha.
He had been working on it with his... you know, he'd been traveling around Europe and especially southern France, and as an assistant to a bishop who was sort of carrying out this preaching mission against heretics, but sort of seeing what, you know, seeing what the church was really like at the time, and you know, a sense was sort of solidifying in his mind of what God was calling him to do. So yeah, I think that. He's very much, and one of the phrases that's associated with him is in medio ecclesiae, in the midst of the church. And he was sort of like this, he's a deep church guy. He was, you know, a sort of quiet, studious, zealous cleric, and then somewhat out of nowhere founded one of the most significant movements in the history of Christianity, and then left fairly little record of his own sort of personal words, but you know, that his legislation and his brothers testify to this.
I feel like that's like most saints, even if they write, like Thomas Aquinas, he obviously wrote a lot, but he himself...
Very little about himself.
...doesn't want... It's not like, don't think this is me. I don't want any of this to be about me. It's about, you know, what I've been called to do, right? Or it's about Christ.
Yeah, yeah, the sort of image is that he writes as if he's hiding behind the monstrance.
Ooh, I like that.
All right, we're here with Father Ephraim, and we will be right back. I'm interested on these household preaching.
That's what I was about to ask, too. I want to go there.
Great.
Cool.
Okay.
Lent is a time of great renewal. God calls us into uncommon freedom in Jesus Christ, but many obstacles stand in our way. Lent provides us with a time to enter into the spiritual battle. We must face God's enemies, the demons who tempt us to fall into sin. We must also face up to our own weakness and all that holds us back from entering into God's promises. If Lent has been underwhelming thus far for you, I recommend Lent with Exodus, with new features like Teach Me to Pray, weekly spiritual guides with Father Boniface Hicks, and Praying for the Dead on Mondays with men from all over the world. Lent with Exodus will provide structure and order during this penitential season. A 14-day free trial for all new users. Go to download.exodus90.com or search for Exodus 90 in the App Store.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. We're chatting with Father Ephraim. Understood kind of a little bit of his vocation story, his calling to the priesthood over the break. We're sitting here, we haven't even talked about that we're sitting here drinking a nice pint of Chimay Blonde.
Yes, not the blue or the red, which...
We haven't actually had a beer in a long time on the show.
That is true.
What is this, just Lytara thing? You just haven't had a beer for a while.
We typically we do whiskey.
We typically do like Scotch
just
or
because.
Bourbon.
I mean, like,
all right.
We're also big Scotch and bourbon guys.
Yeah.
But
we just love like the things that God made
for its goodness.
We just in Belgium.
We certainly in Belgium,
and Scotland,
wherever that is,
and Scotland and Ireland, Scotland. America,
Kentucky.
Yep, Kentucky, mm-hmm. America.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we like those things.
And I'm happy that we have them all in America.
Me too, bro.
Yeah. I prefer to stay here.
Yeah. Gosh. You know, like
other we did go to Ireland.
Other places are so cool.
Which is really cool.
But when you go there and you're like, oh man, this place is cool. But then when you come back, you're like, but America.
Although,
like this
like,
place is
man,
really the best.
You guys have scorpions here?
Yes. But I've only seen like one in my whole life here in Oklahoma.
Not bad. But we do have them.
Technically, yes, but...
How big was it?
Oh, like 2 inches. That's not... Mine, the one I saw, was not that big.
About like that. That's when I saw.
That's really like... That's like spacey to me. That's something else. That's just a different world.
Yeah.
Scorpions.
I don't like scorpions.
No, I'm not a big fan.
You don't seem excited about them.
I'm glad I don't... I've only seen one in my whole life.
Ooh, here's a hot question for you. Like Aquinas talks about how, you know, he does not see it. It reasonable, I guess, to be that animals are in heaven. Like, but there's a lot of debate on this, right? Depends on if you're Augustinian or
not serious debate.
Well, so one of the pushbacks is like, well, in
what
Revelation,
is the argument that animals are in heaven?
Well, in
I mean, I know like, that we see
imagery of them.
Things that are like that in mm-hmm. at least. In the vision seems something like an animal, but to me when you read them it's like it's not a lion, right?
Well, Peter Kreeft talks about this as well, like he's actually
whatever it is, it's definitely not a lion, even if it has like the head of a lion. Have you ever seen a lion that had like a different body? Like that's not a lion. So like it might look like parts of a lion, but it's clearly not an animal. Not earthly animal, anyway. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm not of the opinion.
Sorry,
there
I was like
animals
really vocalizing at you there.
Yeah, like that.
As if you had some This is a stupid idea, but
no. However,
I hope Father agrees with me because that'd be really embarrassing.
Anyway, Jimmy Akin talks about this actually on one of his podcasts, Mysterious World, recently, and he says that it's for several different reasons, and I don't want to like butcher it, but one of the reasons he talks about is like near-death experiences, which people have, and they come back to life, and that through those experiences
they, like,
that they
met their dog or something.
They've seen one of their dogs or animals or things like that. So I was just curious on like if you thought there are animals in heaven.
Hmm. I mean, I do think it's worth just sort of like talk about how there's heaven and then there's the new the resurrection, different things. In a certain sense, neither of which is really like something we have a menu of what's going to be there. Heaven, a little more so, I think. And in that, it's like you'll see God and I think it's worth just sort of like hammering on the idea of you'll see God, and God is the thing that all this stuff came from, and it exists in him in, right. in a more real way. I know that there's sort of like, it's about relationships, you know, it's about like my dog, Rugby,
right,
and how I love him and I want him again, you know, so I don't know that I find that hard to sort of, but it's just like, it's, you don't have a body. You just like, don't have a body.
If you are like in communion with the source of all being, like that dog got its being from that thing. So like maybe there's a reflection of it.
And we don't know, you know, we don't know what it's like where like the thing in the mind is more real than the thing in the world. Like we don't know what that's like. In this case, you know, when there's something in the world, it's somehow like more tangible, more real than the thing that it was when it was just in the mind of its maker. In the case of God, it's the opposite. It's more real in his mind in a certain sense than it is outside of it.
Sure.
So that's hard to reach. So you're
So Descartes was right.
I'm just about God. Don't how dare. How dare you?
I'm just joking.
I'm going to unplug your mic for 30 seconds. You're in timeout.
Do you like Descartes?
I don't like Descartes.
I didn't think you did.
I didn't like Descartes. I don't like Descartes.
I hope he's in heaven though.
I do hope he's in heaven.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he was pretty Catholic, so
yeah.
God willing.
Yes.
I haven't said Mass for him yet, but
unlike,
I could.
Unlike Genghis Khan.
I haven't done Genghis Khan, but somebody else. Okay. St. Dominic's, apparently.
A co-worker?
Yeah, I heard from a co-worker.
Yeah.
Well,
let's
I want to like ask more like serious question, because you were we were talking about this earlier, about this idea of like home preaching.
Yes.
Which I think is this great idea.
Thank you.
Tell us about this, just this concept, because it's a basic concept that I think a lot of people could appreciate.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, do you like to go to parties?
I do. Yeah. Yes.
But you're like zealous.
Dave, you do not like to party.
I know for a fact you don't party.
Yeah. He doesn't party.
To party means, for most people, something that I've never done in my life. But to go to parties, as in like, you know, go hang out with my friends and like run my mouth about something, and you know, maybe there's music, maybe not, whatever.
Yeah
A fire.
Oh yes.
Oh yeah,
there's often a fire.
Great ambience. Amplifier for a party.
Amplifier, beer. So but like, you know, we're all kind of like religious zealots of one stripe or another here. I mean, it's like if you could sort of have a little sermon at your party. You wouldn't want to do that because it would like break the flow of the party. But if you plan ahead of time to do that, that's kind of the idea, is that you have a little house party. But at a certain point, there's a, you know, a pause, a substantive sermon, and then maybe some time of prayer, like a decade of the rosary. And then maybe some thoughts, question period type thing, you know, optional, come and go. And I just sort of started asking friends if they would want to do this, you know, and have good devout friends in the area and in Washington, and thought they might like that, and they did. So we just started trying it, and it has different advantages. So a lot of people who would be the most promising, whatever, the most like people who would most benefit from a robust, long, serious sermon are the people who have a lot of kids and go to Mass and maybe can't devote their whole attention to hearing a sermon. So it's like you get a babysitter or whatever. You somehow provide the context for...
What you do is you invite your friend who has older kids.
Exactly. You get the older kids.
Then you don't have to pay them.
Mm. You don't pay that? You don't pay for...
Brownies.
Mm. Yeah.
Brownies. And
it's like, because you... Coke. No, you don't formally say...
Praise.
You're going to babysit. Yeah. You just invite them over.
And just say, hey, watch
and
the
they,
kids.
And they're like, all right, the kids are going to go over there.
Yeah.
And this is your layperson genius, you know?
Yep.
Because I didn't even think about the babysitting thing. I was just like, well, I'll just shout over the kids. But my friends who, you know, hosted the first one, they were just like, we hired two babysitters. So, yeah.
Whenever I go somewhere, and if the Biddles are there, some of our friends, I say, sweet, I don't have to watch my kids anymore. Because they have these daughters who are just like, magnificent. And they just like, oh. And they're like, the little kid's like, come with us. Let's go play. Yeah. It's like, this is great.
So you get a couple magnificent Biddles.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yes, that would work. Yeah.
And really, all the Biddles are magnificent.
Yeah. All the Biddles.
You would love.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So anyway,
So then you can have all kinds of characters over too. You can have people who wouldn't maybe want to go to a church event or a mm-hmm. academic talk about, you know, like the grace of Christ.
Your neighbor
is,
maybe isn't Catholic.
Yeah. Or your aunt, you know, mm-hmm. whoever. Uh-huh. Your childhood friend who is like a, you know, marketer for like a vape company or something, whatever.
Hypothetically.
Yeah. So then it's different in different homes. So it sort of varies according to the genius of the hosts themselves and gives an opportunity for, and we were talking about how it's, you know, the clergy and lay people want to collaborate, but there's kind of awkwardness. Like, what do we do? Do we have a thing in church?
Do I wait for you to start something? Do you wait for me to start something?
Yeah, we all sit around going like, who says the
in are,
the
name are you?
Yeah,
are you?
Sorry.
It's my house, but you're a priest.
Yeah. So it's you know, on the home turf of the laity and making the services of the clergy available. And just at Dominican communities, you know, we're sort of sitting around like, you know, ready to preach uh-huh. at the drop of a hat.
Don't it's like your thing.
It's our thing. It's fun to do. You know, we try to prepare, but you don't really need, I mean, you know.
When you study for, like, your life is preparation.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Yeah. So you could, you know, improve it, but right. if you don't improve it, it's like something that every, like a large group of devout lay people are happy to just host and sort of amplify.
Yeah. What do you think? Because most people I don't think are going to be within like a reasonable proximity to a Dominican house.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
So like, I suppose you could certainly invite your pastor or...
Yeah. Anybody can do it.
Or a deacon. But I was just thinking, like, you know what? You could even just have a lay person.
A lay person can do it.
Who, you know, not you don't want to just pick anybody. Like, hey, you know, Susan, why don't you preach for us? You know, like, I think, you know, obviously you need to be prudent about it.
Yeah. Right. Well, there's these, you know, these spiritual gifts. And, uh-huh. You find, you maybe the administrators, the hosts, have someone who they know who would be good. Yeah.
I love this concept because we have good friends, like priest friends, like Father Brian O'Brien. He has this idea. He wants to make sure, like, how do I reach my people in between Sundays? How do I, like, have a touch point with the people in between Sundays? That's why he started our podcast, you know, but other opportunities to do that in creative ways I really enjoy.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan, Father Ephraim, our Dominican best friend for the day.
Really?
Yeah.
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 You're welcome.
And
thanks, man.
And next time.
And next time.
We can be best friends next time, too.
Yeah, I mean, I do like Tulsa.
Yeah. We would love to have you out.
Tulsa is
Broken
great.
Broken Arrow.
Yeah, this is Broken Arrow. Yeah, we're like a 9-iron away from Tulsa right now.
It's like, you know, you live in Broken Arrow, you tell someone where you live, it's just Tulsa.
It's just Tulsa.
Yeah, yeah, I like it.
Living on
like,
Tulsa
we're not
time.
Like, we're not pretentious here in Broken Arrow. Like, some suburbs, the people there are like, I'll be nice
we
about
don't need
it.
To
like,
this.
Like
yeah, yeah.
And they're like, you get we it. Are not from Tulsa. You know, it's like, whatever, okay? When you look at the map, it just says Chicago. Yeah. Okay, like, I get it. You're from the borough of whatever, right? It's called New York.
Fun
all right.
fact about Broken Arrow, we were one of the only places, I think, that didn't have a mask mandate throughout
wow.
COVID.
At all.
At all. Never did.
It was so awesome.
It was really interesting. Yeah. Okay, so but we're talking about...
just in case we wanted to make this a controversial episode, there you go.
Just in case we wanted to get deplatformed by YouTube, there
I'm
it
leaving.
Is.
Take that. as a result, COVID is still around.
That's not true, but...
So we're talking. Yeah, so we're talking about like home preaching, like going in and being able to have the opportunity to have a, or, you know, kind of like an organic opportunity to talk about Jesus, right, with other people, mm-hmm. With other families, having an opportunity to have evangelization. What do you experience like when you first got there? What was your expectations? The first one you did. What was the expectations and what was the reality?
Well, I don't know. I just was like, I was just happy. It was to me. It was like a yeah. Again. It was like something that I had wanted to do and that it was just couldn't think of a way to do it that wasn't super awkward. And that, you know, doing it for the first time is a little bit awkward because people are always sort of like, what is this? Mm-hmm. You know, what are we doing? trying to pitch it to other Dominicans, or sort of like, so is it a talk? Is it? I mean, so you know, just figuring it out and hacking through the sort of questions that arise, but don't necessarily, you know, they don't impede the thing. So yeah, it was just fun and trying to figure out how to multiply it, but not with any great pressure. Yeah, it's just a. It's a venue too where I just enjoy the sort of living room as a sure. place of preaching, and then yeah, just having, you know, loved the Bible for a long time and thought of it as one of the primary places of Christian preaching in the New Testament. Even in, you know, Jesus, when he's preaching his parables, then it says like he went inside the house and explained to the disciples what the parables meant. That there's a kind of
I always think that's funny. Because they're standing, you can just picture them like standing there in front of the audience with the look on their face as if like they know what he's saying. Because we're the disciples. We're the 12. I don't know if you guys know about us, but we're with Jesus. The things that he says, we know about him. And then they're like going back inside like, all right, Jesus.
What was that?
You keep talking about bread. And I'm hungry too, but like, you know, like, and then they're like, no kidding. That's good. Jesus, that is good.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest. I don't think they got it. I was on to what you were saying. I don't think they were getting it.
Yeah.
You know, sorry.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, professional religious people. We're all professional religious people who actually don't know much about our religion. You know, so it's like, it's good to have opportunities to sort of have somebody who, I remember one time before I entered the Dominicans, I lived in this funny little, you know, like men's house in the DC neighborhood where the house study is. And there was these Cuban laymen who owned the house and would have these little evening sessions. And one time this, you know, one random member gave a presentation on the meaning of, what was it? On faith. In the Council of Trent. And it was just, you know, he read the documents at Council of Trent and reported on them. And it was amazing. And I didn't know that the Council of Trent had that kind of subtlety about the virtue of faith. And
it's a great council. Mm-hmm. Great catechism.
Yeah. Pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a long one.
One of the best though. Like the catechism, I love the Trent.
When you read the catechism, it's like talk about razor precision. Like, oh, I love it.
Yeah. They had to, it took forever to write those though.
Did it?
Yeah, it's cool stuff. It's cool history. The council itself took like, I forget how many years, but more than 10.
More than 10? Wow. Yeah. I did not know that.
That'd be exhausting.
It better have been specific when they were done. I mean, like, what have you guys done? What have you figured out?
Yeah. Well, it's one of these things where like, for how chaotic it was, it's sort of a miracle that they came up with all that.
Sure.
Sort of, yeah.
Precision. Beauty. Yeah.
So one of the ideas, or one of the things that strikes me about this idea about, you know, having just people together is that what would be the fruits? And I just think like a real friendship. This is the setting where real friendships not necessarily are formed, but could be formed, but are like nourished. Where you're getting together, it's a leisurely setting. You know, you're reaching out for the good things that lie at hand, and then you're nourishing your mind and your soul on something good.
Yeah.
And then after the talk, and I'm curious to you where you think more of the benefit takes place. Is it the talk or the conversation that takes place about the talk afterwards?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Like, well, one thing in the Acts of the Apostles I like is that St. Paul does give this sort of house talk, and it's like do you remember like someone falls asleep?
The dude who falls out the window?
Falls out the window, yeah. And dies. Exactly. So it's like, there's just a certain...
He put the guy to sleep and he falls out the window to his death.
Yeah.
Yeah, Paul actually killed a guy when he was preaching one time.
After conversion.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, that's what it's like. It's like, some people are going to fall asleep.
Yeah.
Hopefully there's no major disaster. Yeah. But just like, and then also, in the sort of question and answer type part, people are going to say stuff and maybe say dumb stuff or funny stuff that is that they wouldn't say in, you know, at a university, like a lecture hall or in church or something like that. And that's, I mean, you know, everyone sort of knows like that you become friends with your friends in middle school because you're at a slumber party and someone says something really stupid and you all laugh at him. And,
yeah,
you know, there's just like, yeah, an intimacy and intimacy. There's an opportunity for sort of like, familiarity, sharing, and Gosh.
But see,
why isn't there,
but
there better words than
you're
intimacy
building,
and sharing?
What I love about it is that you're building that friendship on like the right thing, okay?
Right.
That this is the ground where authentic friendship is actually
this is where Catholic
cultivated, right?
Like Catholic community flourishes.
You have to have a common life, things in common for there to even be a friendship. But when Christ is that commonality between you, this is the friendship that is written about, right? That mm-hmm. this is like the goal that we're all striving for.
This is truly the friendship that prepares you for a friendship with Christ.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so like this is the setting. And sometimes these settings they don't just like happen very often spontaneously where you just like, oh, all of a sudden we had this meaningful conversation that really made me think about myself and made me appreciate these relationships I have. They do spontaneously happen, but rarely. So they have to be, yeah. you have to be intentional, and this is virtue, right? You have to be intentional about virtue.
Yeah.
So this idea, as just hearing you talk about it, I'm just going like, ching, 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 like about all of the other things.
And it's not a lot of work or for, because like, I'm not really good at like foresight and, you know, continuous application of a plan, but this didn't take that much. It, mm-hmm. You know, you just have to sort of be like, well, if at the party there was like an awkward part where we sort of all sat down and would that be okay? And it's like, yeah, we'll do that. And it's fine. So, you know, it doesn't require like registration.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. And it's like, you come knowing, it's like, we're looking forward to hearing the talk, you know, like,
and
also,
hanging out and
also
just being together.
You, like,
out.
Yeah. You as the priest get to develop friendships with
yep.
lay people and families, and the yep. families get to, we were kind of talking about this earlier today about yep. the benefits of priests and families
figuring
having real life interaction mm-hmm. more so than like, oh, I see you in the commons at church,
mm-hmm.
you know, but actually like breaking into each other's lives about, hey, just becoming a member of our family.
Yeah. And some places there's a Catholic culture where people invite the priest over and that's part of the ordinary thing to do. Other places there may be a robust Catholic culture, but they may never think of the priest. Like I was in a place where whenever people wanted to have an event with the friars, they would want to plan the event at the church. I was like, I don't want to invite myself over, but like, why don't you have it at your house?
And just so you know, like, yeah. I have a car.
Yeah. It's like we have this sort of, parish hall, but like you have a couch.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the benefits I think also is to for religious to be a part of our children's lives, right? Because like, again, I don't like my kids watch football, right? They see a football player. They see the quarterback. They see what he does. They see how he acts. They see how he conducts, he leads the team, and he desires to be like that, right? And so similarly, like I want...
And you see the excellences and sometimes deficiencies,
right?
Which is important, right? When you see a bad quarterback and then a good... It's like, okay, now I know...
Within reach.
I know why the good quarterback is good and what... its importance, right?
Right. So I want good, holy men who are striving for holiness, who are striving... you know, for heaven and to live out their vocation. I want those people around my children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm curious what you think is the optimal number of people at this is 50 seems like too many, right? Because you're not going to have that intimacy is going to be diminished.
50 seems like too many.
Five, maybe not enough.
One of the other friars, I was sort of like, there was one where a few of the couples had canceled, and I was sort of warning the friar who was going to be preaching at it. I was like, there might be like eight people. He was like, I would preach to one person.
That would be awesome.
You know what?
I would be there. I would be that one person.
Yeah, I would love to be that one person. Yeah.
Yeah, so 1 to 50.
1 to 50.
Maybe 15 to 20,
15 to 20
would be
normal.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Not counting kids. We don't count kids. Obviously, because otherwise it's like, it's me and Adam.
And all of our kids.
We're already at 14, so.
So thank you, Biddles.
Yeah, thank you, Biddles. Yeah. Father, thank you so much. We're out of time on the Catholic Radio. Go check us out on our podcast, thecatholicmanshow.com. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. And
cheers to Jesus.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Okay, so we can keep going for the podcast if you'd like for just a few minutes.
Oh, okay.
If you dig. Or no.
So what are, you've done this a few times, this idea of home preaching in this scenario.
You know what?
Yeah.
Before you answer that question, I just want to say this again.
You didn't ask a question.
You're right.
But before I answer it.
But I said,
I haven't answered it either.
I made a statement in such a way that I was soliciting a response.
Don't let him slow you down.
It's all right. But he was correct.
Veritas.
I just feel like this is such a basic idea. But yet it feels like a little bit like, wow.
Revolution.
Yeah, right? It's like, hey, why don't, well, you know, like,
who does this?
You know those times when you get together with all those people and you know how you do that, like, a lot?
Yeah.
What if you talk about Jesus?
Yeah.
Like, well, for
talking,
a minute.
I was talking to my dad about this. I was like, yeah, I've been trying to do this thing. He's like, oh yeah, like, when the mayor is running for office in Harrisburg, like, he does this.
You're right.
I've been to the homes of some people who are involved.
I have been to an event like that.
Yep. Yeah, me too.
Where a politician was there and
yeah. To hear him, like hear him out.
Right.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, let me tell you some things and try to sell you on something.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And that's pretty much what, you know, we're.
And then I bought a timeshare.
Yeah. I voted for the guy and he swindled me $50,000.
Man, it'd be nice to someday, maybe.
Yeah.
So I just don't have 50,000. That's the point I'm making there. Like, so someday maybe I'll be rich enough to give.
How much money do you have?
Yeah. Not that much.
Before taxes.
Yeah. It depends
on. How big
on,
is your home?
Depends on if my wife
Mine
has been
is
to,
the garage.
Been to the grocery store. So anyway, you have done this event a few times. Mm-hmm. Like, how has, what is your, like, pros? Do you have anything like, hey, this one went well, this one went better than the
Don't
other
do
one?
This.
Yeah, like,
you mean pros
was there
cons?
A nuance of some of those that you've like, oh, that was better or not better?
Gosh. This is like not my strength. Like troubleshooting.
Yeah.
Like assessing things. Because I always do it, I'm just like, what a pleasure to do this.
You're like, I'm the preacher. I'm just preaching. This is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, there's one thing where I'm always trying to figure out, like, I wanted to make it somehow more, like, for the Q&A part, I wanted to be like, you can stay or not stay. And you could go up and have a drink and talk to your boys over in the corner. That's fine. And trying to find out, like, figure out the joints of the event, mm-hmm. How to sort of do this sort of casual dismissal. But nobody would ever listen when I would say, and so it doesn't matter. Yeah, I mean, it sort of seems like, yeah, getting together at all is kind of the main thing. There is also like hunger too. So there's sort of like the suburbs of Baltimore, I think, and Annapolis. You know, we've been having like good, like easily successful events there. In D.C., there's like such a saturation of Catholic events and talks and
really?
Like Dominican stuff that some people might be like, oh, you know, should I go to this thing on Tuesday? Like, oh, I have this other thing on Thursday. So,
man, what a beautiful problem to have.
It is. I'm sorry to describe the embarrassment of riches that D.C. Young adult scene contains.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that because I don't know much about D.C. other than what I hear on the news. And it seems like just an utterly depraved, like my impression of it is that like it's just depravity on every corner.
Well, there's probably like
a really rich, wealthy depravity.
Yeah, but there's also like there's probably like a lot of Oklahomans there. There's a lot of Ohioans because you know it's if you like have some thoughts about like corn syrup policy, you know you go to D.C. If you want to be a model, you go to New York City. But if you want to like be a staffer for a senator, you go to D.C. So there's a lot of like Midwestern culture too, and but it's temporary. It's very sort of transient.
So they're there, but they still vote back in their hometown.
Maybe we do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's all right. It's like. And the generations of sort of DC Catholicism seem to be sort of 3 or 4 years. So I feel like I've seen many generations of them at this point.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm glad to hear that not as bad as I thought it was.
good. So I guess my last question would be like if there's
I know we have a lot of young guys who listen to the show who are not married yet. And if they're like trying to discern what their vocation is or what their calling is in life, what the Lord desires for them, what would be your like advice?
Okay. Guys, I don't know. The ones that aren't married.
Women don't.
So you kind of set me up
women,
here for
women
the
don't seem to need help.
Pitch.
They figure it out.
I was like trying to softball this like.
Jeez, I mean, like they should obviously be a Dominican woman. I don't even know.
Well, not all of them.
I don't even
no.
know how to say it. I want to, yeah, I keep thinking about how I would have liked to be, you know, as I was saying earlier about St. Francis, like I love the thing, but like if it were possible to be a Franciscan, I would have done it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of the beauty is that he created an impossible form of life. Yeah, I mean that the desire for a kind of spiritual greatness, I mean, it's perfectly possible to be spiritually mediocre in a religious order, but a kind of freedom for greatness is easier in religious life. And so, you know, whether it's sort of like, whether it's in Franciscan or Dominican, or maybe.
What about Carthusian?
Carthusian seems.
What about, and Benedictines?
Yeah, I like Benedictines. I think that it's unclear to me what Benedictines are. I think that there is a really kind of broad tradition there, even though it is in some sense stricter than the Dominicans by design. And we are by design, more flexible, legally more flexible or something like that.
Uh-huh.
They have a breadth of tradition and of, you know, I mean, there's a sort of constant reassessment of like, what is our apostolic life? And that they are in some sense apostolic and just in different times and places that can mean
different things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I've always loved the Benedictines. I just sort of, yeah. I mean, one thing that came up a lot at this conference I was here for was just Thomas's Benedictine youth that he was.
Yes.
Benedictine
as a
boy. And when he defended the religious life against its detractors, he often did it in a way where he wasn't specific. He left it open so that you could sort of think that he was talking about, like it was obvious that he was sort of talking about Dominicans, but the way that he was phrasing it, it's something that like a Benedictine or a Franciscan or a Cistercian could sort of step into that description of like, this is the following of Christ. It's a life of being transformed by God, by the Holy Spirit and faith, hope, and love. And then becoming a kind of like, volcano as a result of that. There's this sort of violence to that and then a weaponization of it in the preaching of the gospel. And so, I mean, I think that the Dominicans did discover, Saint Dominic did forge a really powerful, sustainable, and unified mode of doing that. And, you know, I didn't get it at first. It's like, it's just something that I showed up and thought this looked cool. And then the more I lived it and met the sort of weird variety of friars, the more I saw that it was a place where a kind of infinite variety of lives of holiness were possible. Our approach to sort of vocation tends to be a little bit like laissez-faire, though. I mean, it's like, you know, if you are free to marry and you meet a woman you want to marry and you want to marry her, then like you should marry her. and you should, you know, just blast away at the evils of the world by means of that. Yeah, but there's something... I mean, speaking in a specifically, I guess, like masculine mode, like there is an aggression that's necessary in the Christian life. And, that dads, I think, are getting into that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a reason for the popularity of like St. Michael, the Archangel prayer and stuff like that. And that, yeah, I found that the Dominican life, you know, if I'm tempted to grow slack or discouraged, that it the form of it somehow like recalls me to the greatness of just like, you know, you're baptized, you're confirmed, you receive the Lord in the Holy Eucharist, and now you are a very dangerous, you know, quantity in the hand of the Lord. So I think that, yeah, like, we need a lot of Dominicans. So I think I would certainly, like, hope that men would just sort of see that and acknowledge it and try it out.
It seems like the Dominicans are doing very well.
Yeah, we're, like, at replacement rate.
Okay, I don't know any old Dominicans. Maybe the old ones just don't travel.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you guys are, like, being real brilliant with your marketing and, like, who you send out to come to our show, I guess. I don't know, but...
Yeah, well, there's generational, you know, there is, like, I'm not good on the numbers or anything, but there's a sort of, there's, like, a lost generation.
Mm-hmm. The boomers.
Well, the, okay. the 50...
We can say it. We can say it.
Yeah, it's kind of like, the... It's what is it? It might be boomers and up a little bit.
So. I mean, it's the same way, you know, in a parish life. Like, right. you see the old guys who've been there forever, who, like, helped found the parish or whatever else, and, like, they're there. And then you have this gap, and then the 30-something-year-old, young 40s.
I mean, Gen Xers are also gone. I mean, people, like, the Gen Xers are so absent, people have forgotten that they are even there. You know?
It's, I love Gen X.
Like, but people are like, hey, what about Gen Xers? And be like, who? You know? Remember those guys who are, like, a little younger than the boomers, but, like, older than millennials? It's like, oh, yeah,
Well, their whole thing is non-participation.
Right.
Anything, yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. They're there.
Yeah.
They're thinking.
And they're like, doing it strong. Man. Yeah.
And they're having kids, so that, you know.
They are.
Messes
yeah.
with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I do have one other question just about the Dominican, like, life day-to-day. What is... The fraternity, like, can you describe the fraternity? Like, do you have, like, groups that you, like, are instructed to form, like, more intimate, like, accountability with? Do you, like, or does that just kind of happen naturally? Because, you know, for my life, you know, I have, you know, Adam and Juan, and, you know, if I'm acting a fool, they'll let me know.
Mm-hmm.
Daily.
Yeah. When I act a fool,
mm-hmm. yeah,
they'll let me know. So, do you guys what's that like in the frat house?
I mean, everything's very, like, you know, we're very democratic. So, it's like any given Dominican is going to have a different opinion on whether or not we do that, and then we have discussions about whether and how we should do that.
Whatever that is, or are you specifically talking about some kind of accountability?
Yeah, I guess so. Specifically, the sort of accountability type thing.
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard the term chapter of faults. Mm-hmm.
I have not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like that, I mean, it's a monastic practice.
This is where you used to. Yes. Okay. I've read Raymond Arroyo's book on Mother Angelica.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think, is this where you like publicly confess all the stuff you
faults.
Did?
Faults. Yeah. Like, so, not sins.
No, but
unless,
like,
they were. Of a public kind that was obviously
but like maybe
hinging
you,
on the...
you like broke a rule or like I stayed up 5 minutes past 9 o'clock. You know,
we had a brother in the novitiate who would always say like I checked out an unreasonable amount of books from the library or like I left my laundry in the machine for an unreasonable amount of time. So just like these things are
you know what?
Somehow a foul.
Yes, I like it.
You're in.
Yeah. So I mean,
when he's like, it's his turn, he's going up to be like, yes, this guy's the best.
Yeah, I mean, it's
left my laundry in the dryer for an unreasonable
amount of time. He knew about his master of reason.
Yeah, can't
life
pull
master of reason.
Yeah, can't pull his clothes out of the dryer.
I'm sorry, keep going. Not really, I just enjoyed that. That was a great story.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, he's a good guy. Everyone's just like, I don't know, he's weird. some houses we'll do something like a chapter of faults, others we have, you know, like the practice has lapsed. I mean, a lot. There's just a very minimum.
Do you guys do it? Structure. Do you do it in your province?
There's no provincial rule about it.
Okay,
we really are very sort of house by house about
a lot
of things. Probably kind of like a surprising number of things. So, yeah, I mean, it's like here and there.
But you don't do it in your house.
We're probably gonna be doing it.
Okay.
Yeah, I think.
Mother Angelica did it when she was young.
I bet she
And
did.
Then when she became an abbess, when yeah. she became mother, and she's like, oh, we're getting rid of that. And then she brought it back
yeah.
at the end of her life.
Right.
Where I think she started to see, like, no, actually, this is we...
After we she got it.
We actually need it, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, she was... Yeah, I don't know the details of her life, but I've heard and seen some things about her sort of, you know, her yeah, the rage of Mother Angelica.
Yes,
the,
you know
the
what?
The spunkiness.
Yeah, like...
She's the Achilles she was of like a, yeah, 90s Catholicism.
Yeah. She's a force.
The rage, yeah. Father Ephraim, thank you so much for hanging out with us. Thank you for being here at in Tulsa and coming to the conference, and hopefully we'll get a chance to have you back out here relatively soon.
Good deal. Yeah, much appreciated. Thanks for having me here.
Is there anything... I don't know if you have. Do you have social media? Do you have anything that we could like point them to if they want to check out what you have going on?
I'm considering starting a Goodreads account.
Ooh, a Goodreads account.
Nice.
Besides that, I don't have anything. Okay. Thank you.
All right. No MySpace or anything.
MySpace. Did you have that?
I had a MySpace.
Yeah, what was your song?
Yeah.
I had MySpace. Yeah, because you got to make someone listen to your song.
Your song. Yeah.
Yeah. Mine was.
Mine was the Rocky song.
Like I was
Eye of the Tiger. That was mine.
Eye of the Tiger.
I was like, yeah. I still love to sail. So I had Sticks.
Come sail away.
Yeah, away. That's
yeah.
cool.
Yeah,
it was. It was pretty good. I mean, yeah.
What was yours?
I regretted asking it the second I because it's not fair. Probably like a Weezer, yeah. a Weezer song.
Yeah, it's like first of all, like you can't.
A long
you cannot
time ago.
Judge.
Yeah.
You cannot
yeah.
judge a man
yeah.
today.
Yeah.
by the
yeah.
MySpace song he had back then. yeah. Okay, like
that's not that I don't want you to know. It's that I can't. I wish I could remember.
Yeah,
because I was the kind of guy, the kind of loser who was changing it every few days. Like,
yeah, sure.
Like expecting.
Finally, I found the perfect.
The one that fits me.
Expecting people to notice, like,
yeah,
is the essence of me.
Almost
right
like
here.
Everybody's been waiting for me to find the right song.
Finally, and she's going to understand me.
Right, exactly.
thanks so much. It was a lot of fun. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.